This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning, and you're tuned into the Morning Run. Thank you so much for starting off your day and your week with us. I'm Tan Chung Han. With me in the studio, Joyce Goh and Koo Soo Chuang. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
All right, so look, I know we are struggling to stay awake because all of us stayed up to watch a World Cup final. Yes.
That's for it, you, not for me. I slept, actually.
How dare you, Joyce? Really, you slept through the World Cup final.
Someone has to be up today, no? To be awake.
Well, yeah.
That's did you?
Of course, yeah. What, Chuang, you didn't?
No, I crashed by 9:30, man. I was out the whole day.
I am so ashamed of both of you.
How was the match?
It was a great match. So, in case you missed it, in case you are like, you were like Chuang and Joyce, asleep during the pinnacle event in world football, France.
Pinnacle event.
France has won their second ever World Cup, echoing their 1998 success. So it looks like the number 8 is...
Han, yes. It's not France, it's France.
Oh my God.
France.
Okay. France, okay. Allez le bleu, right? Oh my God. Okay, anyways. All right, pronunciation Nazi. So yeah, France has beaten Croatia by 4-2. And a pretty exciting lineup of scorers there because you got the likes of Paul Pogba and also Mbappe, who is a shining star for the future of football. And yeah, they won a score sheet. Of course, Griezmann scored the penalty.
Griezmann scored two.
He did?
Yeah, the header and the penalty. That's
right. Yeah. Good. You got a couple there. So yeah, 4-2. I'm, again, terribly embarrassed to call you guys colleagues right now because you missed out on the World Cup.
Actually, I'm upset that I missed the Wimbledon finals.
You should be, yeah.
Oh, Wimbledon finals.
Djokovic beat Kevin Anderson, straight sets, I think just 2 hours and 10 minutes.
I watched the semifinals on Saturday and Nadal and Djokovic. That was over 5 hours.
That's right.
That was amazing. It was more like a final match to me.
Watching
that was a great match.
Semi-final was like watching Jar Jar Binks and his younger brother play tennis, right?
Wait, who's Jar Jar in that equation?
Jar Jar Binks is obviously Kevin Anderson because he's about 6 foot, whatever, 9 or whatever. Djokovic is not shorty either.
Yeah, so I believe this is his fourth Wimbledon title. Also, it was a very sports intensive weekend. You had Manny Pacquiao right here in Malaysia, and he picked up his 60th career win after clinching the WBA welterweight crown.
That one I saw.
Chuang, where are your priorities, man?
Boxing, man.
Oh, okay. All right.
He knocked down the guy 3 times.
Really?
Matisse, yeah. And he's he nullified Matisse in a big way.
Right. So did you watch the game on TV or did you go to Axiata Arena?
On the internet, man.
Oh, okay, on the internet. Well, and that's how we are all consuming our sports now, because with this World Cup, apparently this was the most live-streamed World Cup final in history. Well, no surprises there. But, you know, looks like the battle over TV and radio, that may go away, you know, given what we're seeing with these weekends. Sports-related events.
Well, yesterday was actually a sporting bonanza because you had the boxing, and then you had the Scottish Open golf final, right? And then you had stage 9 of the Tour de France. None of you saw that, surely, right? And then you had the Wimbledon final, and then you had the World Cup final, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff going on. Yeah,
yeah. And but again, you know, if you had to sacrifice one or the other, you would think you'd forego everything else but watch the World Cup. But no, my colleagues, I'm not going to let you guys live this down. I'll tell you this right now. All day, I'm going to rag you about this. All right. Now, we'll continue talking about football when we come back. And, you know, we heard so often in the lead up to the World Cup final that football's coming home. Well, it did in a way. We'll explain more right here on BFM 89.9. Queen with Don't Stop Me Now right here on BFM 89.9. What a great song there.
Freddie Mercury. He was the man.
None greater. So that was Koo Soo Chuang that you just heard right there, along with Joyce Goh and myself, Tan Chung Han. We are the Morning Run. So let's talk about football because, hey, you know, I'm going to milk the World Cup for all that it's worth right now. So there's this interesting article in The Star, which with the headline, Football is Already Home, essentially talking about the appeal of the world's number one sport and how it allows us this outlet, perhaps a healthy and necessary distraction, as some may call it. And, you know, what do you guys think here? Look, like, is sports, what role does it really play? What function does it have in society?
Yeah. Absolutely. Remember when Nelson Mandela was in, you know, was in jail for like 20 years? He came out and he basically gave South Africa the Rugby World Cup. And that, in one fell stroke, it unified the entire nation between the blacks and the whites, and it basically brought the whole country together. And that's the potential of sport, essentially.
Yeah, actually, in 2015, the Rohingya Football Club was set up to give its members, I think, something constructive to do during their free time and also provide some release from unfulfilling, insecure existences. This is according to this story in The Star. And other Rohingya clubs have also sprung up across the country, playing against each other or local Malaysian sides. This is on the football.
Right. It's escape from reality, lah. I mean, you know, it's a bit like women watching the World Cup and they only watch their talent football team, right? It's true. And remember, it's true. Absolutely, right? And I think it's their talent that started wearing. Come on.
We do.
The views and opinions expressed by Chris Chuang do not reflect of BFM.
Empirical evidence.
Yeah, okay, look. But if we broaden it out to just sports as a whole, now, Joyce, you use a very interesting word, right? You know, that it's constructive. But that's subjective, right? Because, I mean, ultimately, what real, say, tangible benefit that does it bring? Or is it just something more psychological? Okay, another way to put it is this. You both have two kids, each of you, right? Not together, right? But
we'll let that pass for now.
How much emphasis do you put on sports for your kids, you know, as opposed to the stereotypical Asian parents who's just like, study, go get that A star?
You know,
it's different. As parents, you want to let the kids play sport because it's a healthy pastime, it's a good pursuit for fitness and health, right? But as a country, and governments know this, that's why they build stadiums and they encourage and they have huge sport funding, is because it allows, you know, a huge soft power element to it.
I know some schools that actually put a lot more focus on sports than the norm. One of it, I think, is Stella Maris. I think they're putting a lot of emphasis on sports as well, not just the books and the sorts. But coming back to your question, Han, my kids love swimming and all that. So yeah, and also trying to get them to pick up tennis as well. But they like sports, so I encourage that. It's not like, oh, you must stay at home and study and do your homework. But
Now, would you encourage them to the point that they could pursue these passions professionally?
Yes.
Professionally?
Yes.
Okay. I would, if they're good enough, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Especially if it's something they enjoy, I think, But if they have a talent for it, it's just whether or not they have a talent for that. Right. And whether they like it. First, of course, it's whether they like it. Mm-hmm. But I must say, my family and my in-laws, they're really huge on tennis. So I think because of that, we watch tennis all the time.
At the expense of the World Cup final, apparently. Jeez, come on.
But yeah, so it depends on the child as well, the individual child, but they're still young, so I don't know.
Well, and also the criticism, you know, when it comes to the pursuit of professional sports here in Malaysia is that the ecosystem is not quite there yet.
Yeah.
It's one thing if you're trying to pursue those goals in, say, like the States or Europe, but Malaysia, maybe we're not quite there.
Yeah, but look at squash. Look at Nicole David. She's from my school. I think that came from her encouragement from her parents.
No, I agree with Han, actually. You know, I was in Subang Airport last week, right? I was catching a flight on Friday afternoon, and I was sat next to this French guy. He'd just flown in from Paris on his own way to Langkawi with his two kids. Mm. And then on my right was the KL United football or Malaysia United football team. You know, they were talking, so there was two French guys that were talking with each other. And the parents, the father of the two kids, you know, he played Division 3 football and, you know, his kids were in junior academy in Division 4, in Ligue 1, I think. And, you know, so basically there's a whole ecosystem from the ground up, but from 5 years old, 6 years old onwards, and it's completely acceptable. So sports is a big element in France, and it's just football. Right? There's also things like clearly tennis, there's also golf and things. So it's all from the word go. From 4 or 5 years old, you can join academies and you can get
them
going.
Is it because they have proper schooling for them as well?
Yeah, and then there's competitive, there's leagues, there's referees, there's all, you know, training facilities. Yeah. In Malaysia, you don't have that.
Well, now, one of the talking points that came out of the World Cup, if you guys followed it closely enough, was that, look, Croatia made it all the way to the final with a population of 4 million. And this is an economy that is rampant with corruption. And it didn't even have those state-of-the-art facilities, though. You know, so are we perhaps...
So how did they do it?
Well, that's
just
the
passion.
Well, that's the
passion?
$24 million question, I think, right? I think that's how much the second place or the runners up at the World Cup gets, right? You know, it's like, how did they pull it off? And why is it that other countries like Malaysia, with a population of over 30 million, why, you know, can't we really emulate it? And there's so much talk about infrastructure spending, you know, coaching kids at a young age, but then you got Croatia, who just throws the book at that whole mindset. Right?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, but, you know, don't forget Croatia, you know, 20, 30 years ago was part of the communist bloc, and they were part of a larger country. Mm-hmm. And they've been playing, you know, a sport as infrastructure for the last 200 years. You can say the same thing about Sweden. Sweden's got, like, a population of 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, whatever. You know, they're big hitters.
All right. So let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Again, that's 018-789-8899. Or tweet us at BFM Radio. Let us know what you think. You know, what is inherently wrong, perhaps, with Malaysian football or just Malaysian professional sports in general, at least in the pursuit of such ambitions. Coming up, we will just look at the social media space and whether or not if professional sports isn't working out for you, maybe you could consider being a social media influencer. That's coming up right here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Blondie with Sunday Girl, a song presumably about Joyce Go, a girl who lives for the Sundays. Yes? No? Sunday Girl?
No.
No,
sorry,
not came out of nowhere.
I know.
Just trying to make a link here from between the song and whoever's in the studio. So, yeah, I'm Tan Chung Han, with me, Khoo Soo Chuang, and Sunday Girl, Joyce Go. I'm just going to call you that for the rest of the day. All right, you're tuned into the Morning Run. Now, earlier we're talking about perhaps some career options that may be available to, you know, future generations, be it professional sports. But one thing that's one option that's perhaps gaining a lot more traction is that of a social media influencer. Now, there's this story in The Star about this individual named Angeline Ong. She's a 40-year-old full-time yoga teacher and cycling enthusiast. But I guess more pertinent is that she has got over 170,000 followers on Instagram. Dare I ask, Khoo Soo Chuang, how many Instagram followers do you have?
I've got about 22, I think. Don't care about social media. But you know, this story just shows you how little a star understands about social media, you know. Mm. Because if you're going to write about someone's Instagram account, right, surely you should have their handle there, right, or their account. But there's no sign of it.
Oh.
I mean, I want to go and see what this girl looks like, right?
Just her photo is there.
No, but I want to go to her feed, right? I can't see it because Star hasn't put it there. Mm. Well, you know what I mean?
There's something to be taken up with the editorial board. All right, but anyways, so social media influencing, right? You know, it is something that is, I mean, we are not strangers to. It is something we are quite familiar with. But you know, how seriously do you take these social media influencers? You know, have you ever found a point in time where you're like, yep, I found my, say, my thought process or my behavior actually changed by these social media influencers? Have either of you found yourselves in that situation?
No, but of course, sometimes there's the whole product placement thing that some of them do, you know, the social media influencers do, where they're paid to put out a product or they're paid to say, oh, I ate here and the food's great. So it comes down again to also whether or not with great influencing comes great responsibility. What are they doing with their influence? Is it channeled towards positivity, or is it something towards more, you know, materialistic and all these things? And now with kids nowadays, the young ones, social media is so rampant out there. Right. The amount of things that they can see on social media, there's no filter, no. Mm.
So it's all about perhaps chasing that blue tick, chasing the number of followers that you have, and perhaps it's more commercially driven. That may come at the expense of more responsible messaging. Is that the argument here?
Well, yeah, but look, I mean, the rules have changed so much, right? And I mean, some of these influencers, I mean, you know, some of the YouTube channels my kids go to, I think Sis and Bro is one of them. They're like 8 years old and 6 years old. What do they know? You know what I mean? I mean, there's or Nerf Wars, for example. What do they know?
And Toys Review. There's this Toys Review that my boys watch on YouTube. I get so annoyed. I'm like, why are you watching this?
Yeah, but then the flip side of that is the revenue potential is huge.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the stuff that they can do, and there's endorsements, there's appearances, there's discussions and chats, and of course product placements.
Right.
Well, it's, I mean, the rules of the game have changed so much.
Right, exactly. You know, and I guess the one of the key attracting features of these social media influencers is that they are raw, right? It's unfiltered. They can basically say whatever they want, and that will either attract or perhaps get rid of a whole lot of people, right? So it's quite polarizing in that sense. But you know, with a greater platform, should they perhaps abide by the same rules as traditional media and curtail themselves?
Yeah, I don't think you can, because how can you monitor someone's individual Instagram feed? But I tell you something, right? Social media influencers are terrible company. I hate having dinner with them because all they're doing is taking pictures of themselves, man. They take pictures of the food, they take pictures of themselves, and multiple poses. And I'm saying, get with the program, right? Just have a chat. Do you know what I mean?
All right, that's Uncle Kusu Chuang there.
No. There was one time, like last year, right? End of last year, I was having dinner in Penang Swimming Club, right? The Chinese restaurant on the 10th floor, whatever.
Mm-mm.
This woman, man, all she was doing, and she was, obviously an Instagram thing, right?
Mm.
All she was doing was taking pictures of themselves. So her child was like sitting by herself, the husband was sitting there scratching his nose or whatever. And all she was doing was just talking, taking pictures of herself.
But then
it was terrible.
Yeah, but then she could be
spectacle.
She could be reacting to real demand, right? Because her followers like that stuff. And so, who's to blame her, I guess? I don't know. Well, let us know what you think. Social media influencers, should they be more responsible as they become more influential? And I'm using air quotes when I use the word influential. Or are they just trying to be cool, like this next song by Phoenix, right here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Daft Punk with Digital Love. Daft Punk, of course, being the French electronic music duo from Paris, as Zhuang would say it, from Paris. For the rest of us, it's Paris, and they were formed in 1993. Of course, with the French football team winning the World Cup for the second time in their history, we'll have a few songs, a few choice songs from French Music X all throughout this morning. I'm Tan Chung Han, with me, Joyce Goh and Kusu Chuang. Joyce and Chuang are in the doghouse, at least in my books, because they missed the World Cup. And looks like Joyce and Chuang are not alone, because we've got a WhatsApp from Chia Tian Yuan. He WhatsApp in saying, "Morning gang, I slept. I have never watched the World Cup all my life, and there's no need to." But he talks about watching the Tour de France and how great it is, and it's the greatest. I beg to differ, Mr. Chia. I think the numbers will not lie, and whereby the viewing, the number of viewers for the World Cup far supersedes the Tour de France. So at least I like to think so.
Well, whatever floats your boat, man. If you like cycling, you do. If you like football, you do. It's, each to their own, man.
No, man, it's a zero-sum game. Football is number one. That's it. That's the end. I'm kidding. All right.
Like you.
Terrible. All right. Such a combative tone on this Monday morning. All right, moving on. Look, folks, also today we're going to have the parliamentary seating, which will kick off today. It'll be the swearing in of the 222 MPs today, and then tomorrow it'll be the Agong speech, and then it's said to be, well, at least we hope, it will be a engaging agenda by the new parliament, especially because it is the first time that the Pakatan Harapan MPs are in the driver's seat, and now you've got the BN people over there in the opposition side of the political divide. So something to be something to look forward to. So again, the parliamentary sitting starts today. Now, for the media sector, though, for us in the media or media practitioners, could this next sitting be a signal, a new dawn when it comes to press freedom here in Malaysia? Because we've got some comments from the Minister of Human Resources, M. Kulasekaran, who's considering perhaps lifting the restriction on journalists in terms of where they can perform their parliamentary coverage.
Yeah, this is good news. Hopefully they'll look into this, because remember, I think last year, the predecessor, I think Tan Sri, there was this whole rule that said that journalists cannot go. There was a certain area where journalists can only be at. You can't just walk up to anybody, the MPs, and ask them for comments, which at that time, I think a lot of us were really surprised and upset about that.
I've covered Parliament before, and there's, it's basically a dungeon, right? You're only allowed a certain area in the foyer, of course, and then by the kind of like cafe, by the lift as well. Look, when you consider the fact that the last 61 years have been controlled by one party, and Parliament is basically the lawmakers have been controlled by for one party and you don't have media coverage of the decisions and the arguments made therein, you know, you got a whole bunch of debt and a whole bunch of bad decisions made. You know, the flip side works now because with the Pakatan government in charge and with more media access, you would assume that the accountability and the transparency level rises as well, and you have to expect the same thing, right?
Mm.
So you don't want any more errant decisions to be made. And right now, and of course, Barisan Nasional is in the opposition side. They can they also must learn to be effective opposition lawmakers.
Mm. Right. And that I think that call for the likes of UMNO and perhaps whatever's left of MCA and MIC to, you know, try to, you know, reinvent themselves, rebrand themselves at least, and try to be this credible opposition, I think that is a pretty momentous task now.
Well, here, Han, between you, me and Joyce, you've got more seats on bumps on our seats than they've got seats in Parliament, right? And that's the reason why, because they've been useless in their...
Right, but I think the fear and the risk, as has been highlighted by the likes of, say, Rafizi Ramli and also Professor William Case, is that in this attempt to rebrand themselves, the likes of UMNO could go further right wing, so they could become even more nationalist than, you know, what we've seen coming out from them over the last few years or so, right? But anyways, coming back to this ruling that limits media access in Parliament, and again, it's going to be the new speaker who can actually review this.
Mm-hmm.
The call to review it is actually being made by the Human Resources Minister. But I think, Chuang, it's even worse than what you used to experience, because during your time, it was, you could have access in a foyer, you could go and doorstop MPs there, but... apparently, in recent times, they were only restricted to what's called a dungeon on the lower floor. So they couldn't even access the MPs.
Yeah. It got to a certain degree where they couldn't. It's just access to the MPs were tough. So it'd be good if the new speaker actually reviews this. And I think today marks the first sitting of Parliament under a new Pakatan government. And there's a lot of things that we're going to be looking at. I think we're going to be having a call with Sharak Kutan.
Yeah, that's right. So that's going to happen in about half an hour from now. Yeah. He's going to be speaking to us live from the Parliament grounds. So again, that's coming up at about 7:15 a.m. right here on BFM 89.9. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9, that was Sly and the Family Stone with Everyday People. Everyday people, just like Kusu Chuang, Joyce Goh, and myself, Tan Chung Han, right here in the studios of BFM 89.9, taking you all the way up till 10 a.m. this morning. Now, earlier we were assessing the prospects or perhaps the popularity of the political parties to be represented at the 16th parliamentary sitting, which begins today, I believe. And again, folks will be speaking to Sharad Kutin, who will be speaking to us live from the Parliament grounds at 7:15 a.m. or so. So that's in about 25 minutes from now. Now, in this Malaysia Baharu, while the critics of the previous federal government are coming out loud and strong, at the same time, their proponents are still very much making their voices heard. One of them being actress Ellie Suriati Omar. Now, she was interviewed by the MalaysianInsight.com, and she goes on to essentially say, or provide her support, her still unwavering support for the former Prime Minister, Dato Sri Najib Tun Razak.
Yeah, Ali was one of the supporters who were there when the former Prime Minister was hauled up to court on July 4th to be charged with graft and abuse of power. And I remember, I think, reading reports that she was one of the loudest supporters present that day. And she's saying that she believes that Najib is a righteous Muslim leader who had become a victim of slander. And if you read this story in Malaysian Insight, she actually goes on to say that, you know, there's nothing wrong with Najib and his family leading luxurious lifestyles. As you know, the former Prime Minister, in quotes, comes from nobility and is, in quotes, rich to begin with.
Well, he's not from royal blood.
But according to her, she thinks that, she's saying that he did come from nobility.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. My mama told me that if I got nothing nice to say, I better don't say it. So I'm just going to keep
too late
quiet
for that now, Kusu Chuang. It's like, what are you talking about?
No, come on. I mean, if you've got political leanings, they are your political leanings, and you get your votes as a constitutional right, right? Why would you go so public, and why would you be so vocal in your in your insinuations unless there is an agenda at stake, on hand, right? So, I mean, that's my question.
Yeah, well, I mean, in this story, goes on, I think they asked her whether or not, you know, she was paid and all. And then in quote, she says, you know, I didn't get any aid or deduct from Bien. I joined UMNO after the May 9 GE and I was thinking about Islam, our race and the country. I never got BRIM or anything. So that's what she's saying.
That's the other thing about Malaysia, right? Our politics, you know, in the real world, there is no affiliation between politics and religion. Politics is all about running the country and running the country wisely and prudently, right? Religion doesn't enter into the equation.
I don't think so.
Right?
Well, I think there's a pushback to that, right? If you recall, like say, even in the States, they had the right wing movement called the Moral Majority.
Sure. I understand. You know, but you know, in the theoretical world, in the world of academia, right? If you're in charge of administering a country, administer the country, right? Put in place good policies, look after the people's financial well-being, and advance the country in terms of its financial and economic prowess.
Right.
There is no such... I mean, there shouldn't be, right? Why would there be?
Right. I think, you know, because at the end of the day, politicians, I mean, it is a popularity game. It is a votes game, right? So it appears...
That is the problem.
Right, yeah. And so it appears more often than not that the end, whatever the end is, you know, the end, that being gaining power, justify the means. So if you can garner support either by nationalistic rhetoric or slogans or campaigns that are based on, say, racial or religious issues, and that gets you ultimately to the end prize, you know, then it almost seems like the end justifies the means.
Yeah, she also says that, you know, Najib and Bien fell from power due to losing the perception war.
Well, which is basically the elections, lah. You know, if people don't like what you've done because what they're based on perceiving of you, then you don't get your votes. That's the cruel, sad truth of it.
Right.
These elections. But the problem with politicians is that it's a popularity game. They say things and they do things which people like for now, right? And they say all kinds of ridiculous things. The same thing in America. But in a way, it tends to confuse people because people tend to lose sight of what's really at stake here. And what's at stake is basically the health of the country. Right. And that's what's at stake.
Right. And look, I can also point to perhaps a dishonest or less than honest messaging that came out from Pakatan. But, you know, many people then say
it goes both sides.
Right. But there is a broader agenda. You know, some people were voting along the lines of saying we need a reform, right? We need this hard reset in the federal government, right? So perhaps those less than honest messaging, that can be kind of put off to the side a little bit. Why? Because there is a more important goal. And, you know, perhaps that same tactic could be used by those still in BN, or at least UMNO supporters, or at least for Ellie's case, right? Saying that, well, she's going to spin that narrative and hang on to whatever her ideals may be. It could be along racial or religious lines. Who knows, right? We'll have to see how the political landscape in Malaysia evolves between now and GE15. All right, time now for another quick tune before we head into the 7 a.m. news bulletin. This next one's called Something So Strong by Crowded House, right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.